We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Seconds left for three in the win. Yes! Deion has done it!
I watched Marcus Morris handling the ball like he was a point guard. I watched them give the ball to Julius Randle. This brother was dribbling the ball up the damn court.
First team all defense.
I don't know about this, but Brianna just walked in front of me. Are you kidding me?
Welcome to a Tuesday edition of the RotoWire NBA podcast. It is Tuesday, July 7th. Nick Whalen joined, as always, by Alex Berutha. Alex, I'm currently watching Brandon Trish, former Syracuse standout, shoot a free throw. Eric Diebendorf is present on the bench for this TBT Syracuse team. So even though we are still a solid, 23 days away from NBA basketball, things are starting to look a little more right in the world with Eric Diebendorf on your TV.
I think Ethan Happ was in that tournament too, right?
There's a lot of names in this tournament. It's not necessarily names. It's not really like a good thing if you're playing in it. Like it's really fun for people who followed college basketball for the last 15 years to see a lot of your favorite players who basically, if they're playing in this, it means they probably didn't make it in the NBA. So that, I think that's the reason Syracuse has such a good team in this thing every year. Like I think James and I talked about this on the pod a while back, but Syracuse has not had a great run of NBA prospects, basically going all the way back to Melo in 2003. They've had a lot of players drafted, but not a lot of players that have turned into viable, consistent, long-term NBA players.
Yeah, some of those teams are like guys from all the same college, right? And some other teams are more of a mismatch. That's how, at least how I understand it.
Yeah, it seems like most of them are built around like a core of players from the same college, and then they'll grab others who, you know, they've met along the way. Obviously, a lot of these guys have played overseas, so they have plenty of connections there. But I'm looking at all the players from Syracuse who were drafted in the last 17 years here, and Melo is obviously by far the best. I mean, after that, I think there's a case to be made that the next best player is Michael Carter-Williams. I mean, in terms of minutes played, only 1, 2, 3, 4 other players have even reached 10,000 minutes, other than Anthony, who's played almost 40,000. And those are Hakeem Warrick, Wes Johnson, Deion Waiters, and Jeremy Grant. And then Carter-Williams is just under 10,000 minutes.
Well, we're going to see some Deion Waiters in the bubble, hopefully.
We are. We are. I think we're going to see probably more of him than anyone who's rooting for the Lakers would prefer. I mean, we talked a little bit about the Lakers signing JR, I believe, last week. That happened, I think, the day before we recorded. I think I'd rather have Deion Waiters playing 15 minutes a game than JR at this point, which I understand is kind of a ridiculous thing to even say.
I'm really not sure, honestly.
Well, think about it. I mean, KCP is going to start. Danny Green's going to start. LeBron's going to start. AD's going to start. And likely JaVale McGee. So basically, their same starting five. You're just swapping in KCP for Avery Bradley. I mean, those five are going to play heavy minutes when it comes to the second, third, maybe fourth round of the playoffs. But you still have to play at least 7 guys and probably 8 guys. And you can't just go big and like, unless you're going to play Kyle Kuzma at the 2 or use Markieff Morris, you know, as kind of a small ball 3, or basically they're going to be in a position where they have to turn to one of those guys at some point.
Yeah, it sounds like from what I think JR said, he's just going to focus on trying to hit open threes. I don't expect Deion Waiters to simply, I don't expect either of them really, but I especially don't expect Deion Waiters to simply focus on hitting his open threes and playing good defense.
Yeah, I guess I should correct myself, but I didn't realize that JR was just going to hit open threes. So that changes things. if he's just going to make every open three-pointer that he shoots, then this will be a great pickup for the Lakers. Yeah, I don't think Deion's in that same frame of mind. Like, I think he's one of those guys that until the day he plays his last minute in the NBA will like always be on a mission to become the greatest player in NBA history. Like, I think Lance Stephenson had that mentality for a long time.
Yeah, very similar mentalities. And I wish Lance was here somehow.
I'm surprised he's not playing in the TBT. Do we know that he's not?
I would guess not. I feel like we would have heard about that, right?
I would think so. Yeah, I would think that someone would have alerted us. So we actually have some, I would say, fairly major news. I'll put that label on it today. Both Bradley Beal and Spencer Dinwiddie have opted out, citing concerns over, for Beal, a shoulder injury, I guess, that we had heard about this. I honestly kind of forgot that he was dealing with a shoulder injury. There's certainly the chance that if the Wizards were the 3 seed in the East, I think it's safe to say there's a good chance Bradley Beal would be playing, but the shoulder issue combined with all the other concerns, combined with the fact that the Wizards, whether he played or not, were going to be very much overmatched, means that he will not be joining the team in Orlando. So I saw a Wizards beat writer, I think it was Fred Katz, posed the question, and I posed this in my article on the site yesterday as well. Who is now the Wizards' best player? Is it Shabazz Napier? Is it Thomas Bryant? Is it Isaac Bonga?
I think it's Thomas Bryant, but not by a lot. I mean, I'm looking at this potential starting lineup right
good.
Now.
It's not
Napier,
good.
Troy Brown, Jerome Robinson, Hachimura, Thomas Bryant. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have 2 guys in Troy Brown and Jerome Robinson who were, high-ish first half of the first round picks. Robinson was a lottery guy. I think Brown went 15. Neither of those guys have looked very good at all. And Brown has had some moments. The Clippers gave up on Jerome Robinson basically immediately. That's the reason he's even here in the first place. It's not going to be good. I think there's a pretty good chance that they go like 1-7 or 0-8 in Orlando. And this is kind of a gift to the Nets, who are almost equally undermanned. And I think if Brad Beal was playing for Washington, you know, there's at least a case to be made that the Wizards would have by far the best player between those 2 teams. Would that ultimately be enough to narrow the gap to that 4-game window that they would need to force the tournament? I don't know. But it would have at least made things interesting. And now I think it's just going to be like a really sad crawl to the finish for Brooklyn, Orlando, and Washington.
Probably one of the most depressing ends to, I mean, and we've seen some bad basketball in
Oh, yes.
You know, the last eight games of regular seasons before. But, yeah, I mean, we're going to have, you know, the Wizards led by Thomas Bryant facing off against the Nets led by Caris LeVert and Chris Chioza, I think, probably starting at point guard. You got some, you know, Timothy Luwawu-Cabarrot minutes. You know, Kurucs might have to play some backup center. Lots of dynamics going on here.
Yeah, and this is assuming that everyone stays healthy through this entire period. And it's only eight games, but I mean, like a couple guys get COVID or suffer an injury of some sort and things get even crazier. But that Tyler Johnson pickup for Brooklyn suddenly looking pretty good. I think we might have to bump him up on our projected depth chart. I don't know how much trust they've placed in Chris Chioza, but I mean, at least Brooklyn has Joe Harris. They have Jared Allen, Torian Prince. Like, they at least have, like, proven rotation players in the NBA. They might not be great players, but league average to slightly above league average. Whereas, I mean, other than Thomas Bryant and I guess Shabazz Napier, who's been, like, reasonably good the last couple of years, I mean, the Wizards are the closest thing, I think, that we're going to see to, like, a legitimate G League roster.
Yeah, I would agree. I really don't know what they're even going to do. Like, are they even going to... I don't even know why Scott Brooks shows up. Like, they should just have those guys, you know, just send them out there and play ball, you know?
Yeah, what's the penalty if the whole team doesn't show up? Can they dodge it? Can they just take away the pay of everyone? I don't know. But that's enough talk about the Wizards. I've nothing else to say about them. They were last in my power rankings that I put up yesterday for a reason, and that was before we even knew that Brad Beal was going to sit out. That certainly solidifies that status. We should talk about Victor Oladipo, who I think the day after we published our pod last week announced that he won't be playing in the resumed season. This one is a lot more interesting to me for a number of reasons. One, Indiana is not necessarily a title contender, but they're a hell of a lot closer than Washington or Brooklyn. And I think with a healthy Oladipo coming off of another 4.5 months of rest, you know, there was a chance that if this went the completely opposite direction and he came back with a vengeance and, you know, looked like the guy we saw 2 years ago, all of a sudden that changes things. And maybe Indiana does jump into that conversation of, you know, a team that could pull an upset on Milwaukee at some point in the East playoffs. Instead, you know, it now creates this situation where it hasn't been explicitly revealed, like, how this is broken down, but it kind of seems like it's Oladipo versus the organization, where the organization essentially made him say, I will be choosing to sit out, not we're holding you out.
Yeah, I was listening to the Hoop Collective podcast, I think it's called now. I can never remember. And Brian Windhorst, and they compared it to, like, the Kawhi Leonard situation, where the Spurs were like, you're healthy, so it's up to you, really. And Kawhi's like, I'm not going to play. And this kind of mirrors that. Not exactly the same, but the vibe between the player and organization is similar. And it's just weird because he had been playing and had been looking good. And I saw in the article, I forgot who wrote it, for The Athletic, you know, I think his trainer was saying that he's in the best shape of his career or something, but he's not, but they're still worried about his leg. But how can you, like, it seems like there's a lot of conflicting information.
Yeah, I think the Kawhi comparison is really not that far off. It does seem like there is a lot of lip service being done behind the scenes, I think, by both sides, where you start to look toward a future contract extension. And I think neither side wants to, like, slam the door on the other when it comes to that. And obviously there's interest on Oladipo's side and, you know, the side of his trainer and his agency to, you know, talk him up and preserve his value as much as they can. He's under contract through next season at 21 mil and then completely unrestricted the summer after that. So, it's a tough call. I mean, it's obvious that the team wanted him to play, which is interesting from the perspective of, if you're Oladipo, you'd think, and, you know, you want to stay in Indiana long term, you'd think you'd want to do all you can to preserve that relationship and obviously maximize your earnings on that next contract. But at the same time, it's really clear that he, for whatever reason, just did not feel comfortable. And I think the primary, I guess, storyline, or I don't know what the right word is, but the party line from Oladipo has basically been, you know, contrary to what I suggested, that this time off could actually help him, and you know, he would come back a more fully healed than he looked when he came back in January and February. It sounds like the break actually hurt him in terms of trying to ramp back up to 100%. You know, I think the inability to get to the facility and rehab the same way he was in January, February, and March kind of ended up setting him back rather than giving him more time to heal.
Yeah, that seems like it's the case. But I mean, it's interesting that he'll still be there. Like, I assume he'll be doing rehab work there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see anything on whether or not like this is a permanent decision, you know, because replace him. They can't replace his roster spot because he's going to the bubble. So I don't know. Can he, like, if they get to the Eastern Conference Finals, can Oladipo be like, well, actually, I feel pretty good and I'm here.
That's a good question. I don't know if this will work. Like in baseball, you can submit a new roster from round to round, you know, where you could leave someone off of the ALDS roster, but if they're healthy for the ALCS, then they could make that roster. I don't know if there's going to be a hard date where if you're not on the roster on July 28th, you can't join at any point. But like you said, the fact that he's in Orlando, assuming he's not, assuming they don't use him as like a replacement player, I think that's a possibility. I mean, it would make sense for him, I guess, not to suggest that and get anyone's hopes up. But I mean, considering that this could go on until, you know, if the Pacers go crazy and make the finals, this could be mid-October. At that point, I don't know what would stop him from coming back.
Yeah, you would think by that point he'd be, you know, back into the swing of his rehab enough.
You would think.
I mean, you would think that. So, I mean, I don't want to say it's, like, worth monitoring, but I think it does get interesting the farther the Pacers get in the playoffs. And, you know, right now they would face off against, I think, Miami in the first round, and that's a relatively even series. And, you know, I mean, that's another, you know, that series is going to take 2-3 weeks, mm-hmm. or I guess probably, or if it goes the full 7 games.
Right.
So I don't know, maybe he could come back.
It does seem like not having Oladipo has kind of been the official death knell for, you know, people just writing off Indiana. And I think not having him at all, you know, not having the possibility of him coming back as this, you know, all NBA defender type of player, it definitely eliminates the possibility of them, like, in my mind, making the conference finals or making the finals. But I mean, if it's like Miami, Indiana as the 4-5 or Miami, Philly or Miami, Boston or Indiana, Boston, like, I don't think it's that far fetched to think Indiana could hold its own in a series. I mean, they were basically without a healthy Oladipo all year. And when he came back, he probably hurt them more than he helped them. And they still finished with the same record as Philly, and they're only 2 games back of Miami.
Yeah, I mean, they're really, like, in the, you know, they're pretty much entrenched in, like, that second tier of the Eastern Conference, mm-hmm. which encompasses everyone except, like, Milwaukee and the very bottom feeders. And so, yeah, and you mentioned the one slide they kind of went on was when Oladipo came back. They're only, you know, I think 4 wins behind Boston, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, their plus minus is basically the same as like Philly, Denver, OKC, that kind of team. So like, yeah, if they made it, you know, I don't think it should necessarily shock anybody if they made the Eastern Conference Finals. It would be, I mean, it'd be obviously like a pretty big underdog story if they got there, but, you know, because of, I mean, their bench is going to be an issue. But if they get top play out of their starters, you know, if Brogdon, Sabonis and Miles Turner all have really good playoff runs, it's definitely possible. It's just, I don't know what you're going to get from TJ McConnell or Aaron Holiday or TJ Warren or anybody like that.
So Jonathan Isaac officially joined the Magic as they entered the bubble today. They've been very, very careful not to, you know, say too much about his status. We've heard very little about his rehab even. Since that initial injury, which I think was back in January. But the fact that he's, you know, going with the team, I think is a huge step in the right direction. As of 8 days ago, Steve Clifford had said that Isaac had not returned to any contact drills. So I would say the chances of him playing right away aren't great. But I think it's kind of another Oladipo situation where they're not ruling it out. And I would say this is probably more likely than Oladipo playing, given how long he's been out and, you know, just kind of the convenience even of this for Orlando relative to other teams. I'd be pretty surprised now at this point if we don't see Isaac, maybe not during these first eight games, but maybe for round one of the playoffs, assuming Orlando is able to hang on to a spot.
Yeah, that seems possible. Yeah, again, it might be a situation where they just have to get him in the gym and going through drills with everyone else to see how he feels. That Clifford quote is kind of funny considering, like, was he supposed to be doing contact stuff during coronavirus quarantine?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But yeah, I mean, I could see him, you know, I could see the argument for both sides where it's like you want him to get the playoff experience, even if it is, you know, potentially facing the Bucks and getting annihilated. Or you could say, what's the point of even bringing him out there or having him play? So I can see both sides. But yeah, it would be nice to see him play. I mean, just from a perspective of first round, it would, you know, at least make things interesting where you'd have, you know, Isaac on Giannis most of the game.
I mean, if you're looking at the Magic roster, is he like pretty easily the number one asset they have?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, I'm partial to like Vucevic. Like, I think Vucevic is pretty good, but there's not going to be a lot of teams that like want to take on that contract.
Yeah, I'm not saying best player. I'm saying best asset. I mean, Vuce turns 30 in October.
Best asset for sure. Yeah, I don't think it's Aaron Gordon at this point. Aaron Gordon had a great end of the season, and his contract is you know, structured to the point where it's descending, and I could see a team being interested in him as like a small ball five or something. I think I don't know if there was like rumors about him potentially going to the Rockets to kind of be a part of that front court, but yeah, I think I do have to agree with you. It is probably Jonathan Isaac at this point.
I think we agree. Like, Gordon needs a change of scenery at some point. There's no question about that. I mean, we're 6 years into this thing, and his last three seasons have been varying degrees of, like, basically the same with, you know, moderate improvement as a passer. Looked like he had maybe turned a corner as a three-point shooter last year, shot just about 35% on 4.5 attempts. You know, was at 6 attempts per game the previous year, 34%. And then this year, back down to 30% and fewer attempts, you know, not even 4 per game, despite playing basically the same minutes load. So, I mean, I think a lot of people have tended to pile on Gordon because of that. I still like him. Like, if I were the Rockets or whatever team, like, I would be more than willing to take a chance on him, assuming you're not giving up too much. But for Orlando, I mean, I don't see him turning the corner unless something significant changes with that system for them. Whereas, I mean, Isaac, I don't know if he'd be on the short list for most improved player had he not gotten hurt, but through 32 games, 12 points a game, 7 rebounds, 1.5 assists, 2.4 blocks, 1.6 steals. Like, if he wasn't going to be on the short list for most improved, he was going to be on the short list for all defense.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if you have those numbers, you like have to make all defense. And I'm still not, I don't really have a ton of confidence in his, like his offensive game. But I mean, if you can get 12 to 15 points a game relatively efficiently, not even like that efficient, and be, you know, over like way over 3 combined steals and blocks, you're clearly one of the best defenders in the league. It's not even close.
Yeah, I think the lack of like major offensive production probably would have hurt him in terms of most improved. You see 12 points, 7 rebounds, and it's kind of hard to put that up against what like Bam Adebayo or Brandon Ingram or Jason Tatum have done this season. But I mean, well over 3. He's had a combined 4.0 steals and blocks per game in less than 30 minutes per game.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, people were kind of like hoping this would happen, but there's a difference between seeing like looking at the per 36 numbers and being like, what if? And then he only increases like his minutes, you know, basically 3 more minutes a game, and his production is way up. So I kind of want to say it's not sustainable, but he did it through 32 games. You know, it's not like it was 15 games or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to, he doesn't qualify for any of the leaderboards, but he would have been, you know, way up there. I think he would have been like 2nd in blocks per game, tied for 2nd, and like within the top 10 in steals per game. And I'm trying to do quick mental math, like would have pretty easily led the league in combined steals and blocks. Anthony Davis is at 3.9, and I think Whiteside is fairly close just because he has so many blocks, but he would have easily been in the top three. And I think if I'm doing the math correct, would have been number one in combined steals and blocks per game, despite really not playing that many minutes. So he's a guy like, you know, even if we think Orlando's not going anywhere this year, which is almost certainly going to be the case, I would still at least be excited to see what Jonathan Isaac can do, even if it's only for four or five games. Whereas some of these other teams, like it's pretty hard to psych yourself up to see four games of Mo Wagner.
Yeah, that is an understatement.
Other minor news today. I think this was actually yesterday. Suns GM James Jones, totally forgot he was the Suns GM. But he, once again, very cryptically confirmed that Kelly Oubre is going to go to Orlando with the Suns. And I think it was Shams who actually had a report last month that the Suns had ruled Oubre out, but apparently he's made better progress than expected. And it does seem like at some point we might see him now in Orlando.
I mean, I still don't expect them to make the playoffs, but if they even want a remote chance of making the playoffs, they need him there. He's not amazing, but
well, I personally think he's amazing.
they need his, their starting lineup is, is really productive when they actually have those guys in there that they want, with Ayton, Oubre, Bridges, Booker, and Rubio. It's a really good lineup. But as soon as you take Oubre out of there, it becomes really bad. So,
yeah, what does that tell you about Oubre?
Best player in the league, probably.
Yeah, I'm not willing to completely rule them out just because they are only two games away from the four game gap that would be necessary to force that playoff. But they have a really, really tough schedule, especially compared to what New Orleans, Sacramento, and Portland are facing, the three teams that they're competing against to ultimately challenge Memphis. I mean, they play Dallas, the Clippers, Indiana, Miami, OKC, Philly, and Dallas again, which none of those other teams have anything remotely that close. And I mean, maybe you catch Dallas in that final game where it's meaningless for them, but you know, getting the Clippers in the second game when they'll almost certainly still be playing for something is a pretty tough draw.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of been, I still think they have enough talent to be good, but
oh, for sure.
You know, losing Ayton for that time really hurt them, and they really should be in the eighth seed race here, but it just, yeah.
I mean, their top three, on paper at least, of Booker, Ayton, and Oubre is definitely better than Orlando's top three. It's definitely better than Brooklyn, San Antonio, and Washington's top three. It's better than Sacramento's. New Orleans and Portland, it's iffy. I think Portland has the best player out of those three teams, but I don't know. I mean, like I said, on paper at least, the Suns trio, would you rather have Booker, Ayton, and Oubre, or McCollum, Lillard, and Nurkic, or Melo?
I'd probably still take the Blazers, but it's close. It's pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, I would want Dame more than anybody.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And but maybe if you extend out, I don't know. I just think the Suns starting lineup is really good. Like it's.
I think so too. It just doesn't lead to wins for whatever reason.
No.
Yeah, I refuse to accept that those guys aren't as good as we think they are.
Right.
It's not possible.
I agree. And I like Ricky Rubio a lot. Them, you know, probably more than most people. But he's been awesome for them.
Yeah. Yeah. There's really no excuse for them to be where they are. They shouldn't be 13 games under. They should not be behind Sacramento, and they should not be behind San Antonio. Once you get above those two teams, though, it's like it's really hard to make a case that Phoenix is like demonstratively better than Portland or New Orleans or Memphis. But I mean, roster wise, again, like you match up the Memphis roster and the Phoenix roster, and I don't think those teams should be six games apart.
No, I mean, I would pick Phoenix in a seven-game series. I won't even really think about it, even though that may not be logical based on the wins and losses.
Right. Yeah. There's just something, like ingrained in that franchise. And I think Sacramento is the same thing. It doesn't seem to matter who the personnel is, who the coach is, who the GM is. Like, it's just been perpetual underachievement for a full decade. Let's look at speaking of bad basketball teams, let's look at the eight teams that will not be in Orlando. So that's six teams in the East: Charlotte, Chicago, New York, Detroit, Atlanta, and Cleveland, and two in the West: Minnesota and Golden State. How would you, this doesn't have to be super scientific, but how would you rank these teams in terms of like how good a shape they're in going forward, whether we're looking at next season, a year or two in advance? You know, obviously you can't look ahead too far, but kind of doing a reset, like looking ahead to 2020-21, is it fair to say that Golden State is the easy number one?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're kind of in a different class.
They are. They are here because of a fluke, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, so Golden State aside.
I think for number two, it's got to be between Atlanta and Minnesota, right?
Yeah, I mean, this part of me still likes this Bulls core, but it is starting to kind of go down that Suns path.
I think having Karl Anthony Towns for Minnesota and having Trae Young for Atlanta is so much better than having Zach LaVine for Chicago. And Atlanta and Minnesota both have, you know, number twos at this point. And Atlanta just picked up Clint Capella. So, like, right. Atlanta could easily, like, jump over, you know, like, that Orlando-Washington tier next year and be making the playoffs, and we shouldn't be shocked. And I agree with you. I actually really like the Bulls core, but they're kind of losing. They're losing a lot of steam at this point as something that might be able to work. I mean, they have to. If it doesn't work next year, it would be surprising if there weren't if there wasn't a roster blow up.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I love watching Kobe White, like I have a hard time believing that he's necessarily going to be super beneficial for the development of the rest of those guys, if that makes sense. You know, like I think he's almost, it's kind of a Colin Sexton type of thing where like, yeah, the numbers look good and he oftentimes does pass the eye test, but I think it would be a big mistake if Chicago's like, all right, we're going to build around Kobe White going forward. Like, I think he's a useful player as like a, you know, a microwave guy off the bench, maybe your second or third scorer. But, you know, he had that run at the end of the year where he was just going for like 25 every single night on a ton of shots. He's taken like 9, 10, 11 threes and making them at a decent clip, but it wasn't exactly leading to wins. And, you know, as much as we like a lot of those guys on paper, like Wendell Carter has not been able to stay healthy through two seasons. Lauri Markkanen has kind of been the Bulls version of Aaron Gordon in terms of how his development has gone. And it, even though they've had these high draft picks, and it feels like they've drafted well, right? Like, I wouldn't say that they've like dramatically missed on any of these guys, but it also doesn't feel like they're as close to getting back to being a playoff team as they should be, considering that they've picked seventh overall in each of the last two drafts. They got, you know, they got the Markkanen pick, which was, I think, sixth or seventh as well as part of the Jimmy Butler deal. Those guys just haven't really grown in the same way that other guys drafted before and after them have.
No, and I mean, this was another year they dealt with a lot of injuries and stuff like that. Like, they, I mean, it's like, you know, Thomas Saransky is second on the team in minutes, Thad Young is fourth. Like, something clearly went wrong there. But I agree with you, like, their drafting has been good. It's really hard to complain about getting Wendell Carter and Markkanen and Kobe White, but it's just, it doesn't seem to mesh. And like, I think they don't exactly know what kind of, like, Otto Porter was a good pickup too. And who knows, you know, what would have happened had he played a full season. Cause I'm looking at the plus minus numbers right now, and he's second on the team, but he only played 300 minutes.
Right.
Even Chris Dunn is plus three. And Kobe White's minus five, you know? So like, What are you even doing there at point guard? Like is, you know, White's offense is great, but he's a terrible defender. Dunn's defense is great, but he's terrible on offense. But everyone would say they would rather have Kobe White. It's just,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've drafted well on paper, like I said, but it doesn't necessarily feel like they've landed a franchise guy or even a guy who's like a borderline franchise guy. You know, I think the expectation, if you're picking in that top seven or eight three times in a row, you're at least hoping to come away with you know, someone like at the very least, like a CJ McCollum, you know, like maybe not a guy who's a number one, but at least someone you're like, all right, we can semi build around this guy. We're going to need to find another star to eventually put next to him or kind of be one step above him. But at least we have him locked in. And like right now, like, is there anybody on this roster other than Zach LaVine who the Bulls would be like, this guy's untouchable? There's nothing we would do that would enable you to trade for him. And even LaVine probably isn't untouchable.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody on this roster that is untouchable. I'm sure they wouldn't want to trade Wendell Carter because we still haven't seen that much of him.
Yeah,
you know, over the first two seasons. But I still think I'm with you. I think everyone, including LaVine, is pretty tradable. And if you're trading LaVine, it's because you think,
right,
well, Coby White's basically the same player from an offensive standpoint, or we hope. And yeah, having two of these guys is redundant, and we'd just rather trade LaVine, get assets. But then you're hard rebuilding again.
Right.
And who wants to do that?
I mean, so if like Brad Beal became available, the Bulls would trade anybody on their roster as part of that deal, right? Like there are certain teams that would, you know, like let's say Denver, like they'd be like, I don't know if we want to trade Michael Porter. Obviously, we're not trading Jokic. Like, it's a testament to this roster that I don't think there's one guy that they would say this guy's not available.
Yeah, like they would give up Coby White, and I'm sure they would like do Coby White and you know, Wendell Carter for Bradley Beal or something like that. I think if they had the opportunity to put like Beal and LaVine together, they would trade any amount of young players to try to get that done.
God, that would be something. That would be like a kind of like when they put Melo and Iverson together in Denver.
It would just be like taking turns, you know. It'd be like kind of almost like that Russ KD where your turn, my turn.
Yep.
At least it'd be exciting basketball, more exciting than they're playing now.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. So yeah, I think Golden State easily number one for next year. That could be like an all-time turnaround, going from 15 wins to however many they win next year. But of course, that's kind of extenuating circumstances. I'm with you at Atlanta, based on the fact that they have Trae Young. Minnesota, based on the fact that they have Cat. And I'm not very high on the D'Angelo Russell partnership, but I mean, when you start to look at the teams that are also in these categories, like, right, no, like Townsend Russell looks pretty great compared to what the Knicks have or the Pistons have or the Hornets have.
100%. Yeah. I mean, is there a team that stands out to you as a clear number three? Is that just Chicago then?
I think it's Chicago. I think it's Chicago. I mean, Charlotte, based on where they were last year, is in way better shape than I think we thought they would be. You know, the emergence of Devontae Graham, Terry Rozier playing about as well as you could expect, you know, based on the increased workload and the emergence of another guy that we didn't expect in that backcourt. PJ Washington looks like a minor hit in the draft. Obviously, they still have some sorting out to do, but at least like Batum comes off the books after next year. Eventually Bismack Biyombo will be gone. Like all the sins of the mid decade, will kind of eventually leave that roster and they'll be in better shape. Whereas, you know, I think it's more interesting to almost talk about the bottom spot. Like for me, it's Detroit or Cleveland. The Knicks, for all their incompetency, you know, they have RJ Barrett, you know how I feel about him. They at least have some like productive pieces and enough pieces to avoid just being like horrific night to night. I still like Mitchell Robinson. I don't feel like Cleveland or Detroit have anybody that I would put in that category.
No, the RJ Barrett Mitchell Robinson combo is enough to at least be exciting and make you think, you know, like this could turn into something. I don't feel the same way about like the, you know, Derrick Rose Christian Wood combo, or the, you know, Bruce Brown Christian Wood combo. And the thing about like Detroit and Cleveland is they both have like that one, they still have like that one piece of the old roster they can't get rid of. Like the Pistons have Blake, who basically can't be traded at this point because of his contract. And the Cleveland Cavaliers have Kevin Love, who basically can't be traded at this point because of his contract. Or he could be traded, but they feel like what they would get in return for him is like embarrassing. But they should probably just do it. So I don't know who's at the bottom there. Like I mean, at least the Cavaliers have Colin Sexton, who looked way better than I thought he would this year.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely a sentence that can be said. I think it has to be Detroit. Like, because, I mean, Darius Garland, we'll see. There have been plenty of very good, productive NBA guards who have struggled as rookies. And I think it's too early to pull the plug on him, certainly. And he didn't look good, but we'll see. I think he deserves at least one more year, probably two, to properly evaluate him. Like you said, Sexton is at least going to be like a league average guard on the aggregate on both ends. Kevin Love, as much of a burden he is as a contract, still a good player when healthy. Larry Nance, even though he can never ever crack the starting lineup, no matter how well he plays, still pretty good. And they do have Andre Drummond. So, at least you got a guy who's going to give you like 17 and 17 on a lot of nights. So, I mean, they can at least field a competent NBA roster, whereas we'll see what Detroit does this offseason, whenever the offseason takes place. But, I mean, looking at their depth chart right now, Derrick Rose injured, Svi Mykhailiuk, Tony Snell, Blake Griffin injured, and Christian Wood, who I believe is set to become an unrestricted free agent this year or this offseason. So there's a chance he might not even be back.
Yeah, I think they have to take the bottom spot then. I mean, I think they would be more fine with being bad than the Cavs, right?
Like, yes. I mean, the Cavs, they've been through this twice with like the post-LeBron roster hangover, and they've handled it miserably both times. Like, just drastically tried to overcompensate for losing LeBron, and it just like digs them a deeper hole. If they had just gone full rebuild and not tried to like sign Kevin Love to this 45-year deal for nostalgia or keep Tristan Thompson around at all costs and trade front, like, none of this stuff made any sense at the time, and it doesn't make any sense now. I mean, were any Cavs fans, after going to the finals four straight years, was anybody pining for like, hey, we need to find a way to win 28 games? Like, no, bottom out. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, who was going to go on, you know, ESPN the year after LeBron left and with the Cavs at the bottom of the standings and be like, this organization is a disgrace?
Right.
You know, how could they not win 40 games without LeBron James?
The team sucked when LeBron was on the roster too. Like, yeah, they went to the finals, but it was a terrible roster. Like, it wasn't like LeBron, you know, left and took half the good players with him. There was nobody left. Like, they willingly took themselves out of the Zion and Morant sweepstakes to just win like three more games, two seasons.
Yeah, like how little confidence do you have in your scouting to where you don't even want to entertain you're trying not to even entertain the idea of having to make it like a top five draft pick. You're like, no, I prefer not to deal with that.
Yeah. Well, think too, the year before, they could have traded that pick and they held on to it and then ended up basically playing their way out of what would have saved them, you know, like drafting Zion or Morant. It's tough to fault them for how it worked out. You know, I think there's probably an expectation three seasons ago now, when LeBron was still there, and they ended up going to the finals and getting absolutely slapped around by Golden State. But I mean, they clearly should have traded it back then, depending on what was available. You know, had they known that it would turn into Colin Sexton.
Yes. Yeah. So Detroit's still the bottom. I mean, the Cavs won. You know, what they did worked out.
They're not the worst team in the league.
They're not the worst team in the NBA. They're in the second worst spot in the NBA. Although they have a chance of getting there, but they actually have assets that are theoretically tradable.
Yeah. I mean, the Kevin Love thing, like, I still think you can get value for him. You're not going to get the same value that they would have received 2 years ago. But I also don't think you're going to have to, it's not going to be like a wildly embarrassing Andre Drummond trade situation.
No, that was...
Although it might be close. I mean, you'll be able to get something. Mostly because the other team's going to have to match salaries. So that means you're probably getting like someone who's at least a name or who was good enough at one point to get that much money. The thing with Kevin Love is even when he was at his absolute zenith in Minnesota, he was not ever carrying a winning team. So I never really understood that model of like, all right, let's take away LeBron and now it's your team, Kevin. Like, what was the ultimate goal there?
That is a very good question. I don't know. Maybe it's supposed to be like a thank you to Kevin Love. You know what I mean? Like, to like, sorry you had to deal with LeBron and be like, you know, put in this position, just like shoot corner threes. So here's a ton of money. Just do your Minnesota Kevin Love thing for us. Bring people into the stands to see you go for like 30 and 20. But at that point, you know, he had lost like 40 pounds and just became a 3-point shooter. He wasn't going to like go back, you know, like, were they going to just put him in the gym and force feed him and just, you know, get him back to being, you know, 2012.
That would be great. I would love Kevin to see Love. That. I feel like a reverse Jokic.
Yeah. I mean, that would have been way better. You know,
I would love to see, like, I don't know if, has anyone ever asked him, like, do you regret losing the weight?
That's a good question. I'm sure he had more fun playing, like, you know, being the guy in Minnesota, like, just from an on-court perspective. But obviously, he got a title out of transitioning into, like, a more modern role. Yeah. He's just back at defense the whole time. You know, it was just a matter of changing his offensive game.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. Okay, let's finish out. There's an article on ESPN this morning, a very long article detailing the relationship between Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. We don't have to dive super deep into this. I mean, there's certainly been rumblings about this being not the greatest partnership for a while now, and I think things have only been exacerbated by you know, the way that Gobert kind of kicked off this entire COVID thing within the NBA. But I mean, I forget which of the two in the article compared it to like a Kobe and Shaq type of relationship. That's a little generous, but maybe in terms of the maybe in terms of like the personalities, that makes sense. I could see Gobert seeing himself as like a Shaq-like figure, but in the short term, I mean, I'm inclined to believe that this won't be that big of a deal. I think enough time has passed. I think both guys. I mean, the implication in the article is basically like, look, we don't like love each other, but we have a solid working relationship and it's going to be fine. I just think though now, like anytime something goes wrong with this team, whether it's in the Orlando bubble or even trickling into next season, this is out there. And it just seems like what, you know, once you kind of let the cat out of the bag with something like this, it's pretty hard to go back to a time when everyone thought this was just a fine partnership.
Yeah. It's kind of turned into like Philly West, right?
Yeah.
Like people, everybody understands that Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid don't like hang out. And it seems like their relationship is very much like on the court. And, but the Jazz, I don't know, like their organization comes off as like kind of secretive and like, you don't really know what's going on and it's all kumbaya and everything like that. And so they like have this come out. I think it seems like a bigger deal than it probably is because there's this kind of this air around the Jazz organization, but it was, I mean, the article was interesting. It seems like they both like kind of just don't, you know, I guess the main things in the article were like, you know, Gobert getting upset when people, when especially Mitchell doesn't pass him the ball. And then, you know, like
to do what?
To dunk, apparently. But then, you know, then Mitchell and other teammates get upset that apparently Gobert, I've never seen this really, gets upset on the court and is almost like, you know, gesturing to his teammates, hey, I was open or whatever, but like all the time. And some like sources from the article were like, listen, like Gobert, okay, Mitchell's not going to see you every single time you're down the court. And also he's still working on his playmaking. He's not a pure point guard. And it just seems like there's kind of like a lack of understanding between like both players and how they, especially how Gobert expresses like how he feels.
Yeah. I'd like to imagine Gobert is like the guy at Pickup Hoops who's just, as soon as he passes it, he's like, clap it, ball, 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 here, here, here. Which, yeah, I don't remember. I thought the same thing you did. Like, I don't remember watching them and thinking, you know, Gobert jumping jacks under the hoop or, you know, loafing back on defense because he didn't get the ball. Like, I mean, it must just be stuff that's off camera, but, yeah, like I said, I don't think this is going to be a huge issue in the short term, but I do think long term it's just, you know, for it to get to the point that there's a big expose in ESPN about it, it's a real thing, you know, and you know, those guys can downplay it as much as they want, but, you know, eventually that stuff comes to fruition. And when it's time for contract extensions and things like that, you know, that's usually where organizations end up having to make tough calls.
Yeah, it seems like this may have actually not come out until later, had it not been for the coronavirus thing.
Yeah, well, that,
you know, like, I think.
Or go ahead.
I mean, that just seemed like a starting point for, like, being able to write the article. Otherwise, it probably, what's your, like, you're just kind of writing, like, this random hit piece in the middle of the year being like, hey, these two guys don't like each other. People kind of will almost been like, so what? So you would have to wait until, like, contract times, like you mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. I mean, we've seen this play out over and over, whether it's Kobe Shaq or Durant Westbrook, Simmons, Embiid.
Giannis Jabari.
Giannis Jabari, right. Saturansky and Beal. I mean, it almost always ends badly, I guess, is my main point. I don't know how this one's going to go. I mean, obviously, you know, Mitchell's younger. He's the more valuable all-around player. He's the face of the franchise. I think if they had to choose between the two, it would be him. It just, yeah, like I said, very rarely when a bad relationship becomes public, you know, do you sit back and it's like, oh, it's been 10 years. That just blew over. Like, that doesn't usually happen.
Yeah, I agree with you, too. It seems like Mitchell's the one they keep. You know, kind of the read you get from the article is like Gobert's clearly the annoying one. Right. And he even like says as much that he's like, people think I'm annoying and my none of my relationships are perfect. It's like, what is happening?
I'm a pretty good guy.
You know, so he there's quotes like that. And then, you know, Gobert also kind of being like the lumbering big man, even though he's like basically a defensive player of the year. It's just like it seems like
two times,
you know, those factors, two time defensive player of the year. It just seems like they would choose Mitchell, who I don't know who they don't really fault him with that much in the article, right? Other than like not seeing Gobert as much as like a perfect point guard should, which he's not.
Yeah, so, there was really no, I wouldn't say it was a hit piece by any means, but more of the negative things that come to light are about Gobert. You know, like the one thing I think that went the most viral on Twitter this morning was the note in that article that the Jazz don't build in arm workouts for Gobert because they know he's going to do it on his own because he's so concerned about how his arms look.
Dude, I read that paragraph three times because I thought I misread it. I was like, that can't be a real thing.
Yeah, totally real. It's like, that's insane. Okay. All right. So we just said like, he's just going to take care of that himself.
just a flex.
I don't know.
On Instagram.
Yeah, the way it was included, too, it was just at the bottom. It was like one sentence at the bottom of a paragraph that didn't necessarily have anything to do with what was written above it. But I forget, was it Tim McMahon who wrote that? I forget already. But
probably felt obligated to
exactly. You get a nugget like that. He's just like, I got to get this in there somewhere. Okay. Last thing before we close this out, we got our first look at are they just calling it the Giannis 2 or the Freak 2 today?
I don't know, actually.
What are the first ones called? Are they just called the Freak?
Maybe.
Sound like a 55-year-old man.
are those new Freaks you got on?
Yeah, exactly. All right, the Zoom Freak 1. So I assume these will be the Zoom Freak 2s.
Okay.
I like them. The interesting, this is kind of like, I wouldn't say it's like a leaked image because it came from ESPN, Eric Woodward. Had the image, so you know, we kind of just have this one look at it right now, but I like them better than the ones. I'm on record as saying the ones were pretty bad. I think they look like the type of Nike basketball shoes that you like only find at Kohl's. I just thought they were really underwhelming, especially for a shoe named after a guy called the Freak. I thought they'd go a little more off the wall. Like this one, the photo that was going around is more of a representation of kind of what I thought we'd see with the ones, but I like them a lot. They kind of look like a mix of the KDs and the Kobes, which I believe Giannis wore Kobes up until he had his own shoe. But we're also reaching a point in basketball shoes where like we've done it all at this point. So it's kind of hard to make like a totally original shoe at this point. But overall, I like these.
I have a really hard time like separating the design from the actual shoe from the colorway.
Yeah.
And I really hate the colorway on the leaked photos or whatever we want to call the photos. I think it's horrible, but I think the shoe is better. I agree with you on that. The shoe definitely looks better. Have you? Did you like try on a pair of the original Greeks, like the Greek Freaks? No,
I don't shop at Kohl's really.
So I don't even know how these shoes feel. So hopefully they improved the inside too. But like I remember trying on. Did you ever try on like those original like D Rose shoes from Adidas, the super lightweight ones? And that was like the whole thing. It was, like, these are the lightest shoes ever.
No, I don't think so. I was never a big D Rose guy.
Okay.
So no.
Okay. I tried those on and it was like one of those situations where it's like, I can't wear these. Like there's no material here. And I just switched to like Hyper Dunks or whatever.
Yeah. I will say a reasonable number of NBA players seem to be wearing the ones during the season, right? Like I know there was a photo yesterday that the Lakers posted. Deion Waiters was working out in them. So I think that's usually like the measurement is like if guys who aren't your teammates are just putting these on around the league, like that means they're at the very least really comfortable.
Yeah, that has to be the case then.
Yeah. I'm surprised that he goes with the low tops, right? Like somebody with like legs that long and somebody who's that tall, like it's kind of weird that, you know, you'd think he'd go higher, but overall I think, can we give these the RotoWire stamp of approval?
I think we can, yeah.
Okay. Well, hopefully we get better colorways at some point here. But I think that'll do it for this episode. I'm out the rest of the week, but you will be back with Ken for sure, possibly Shannon later this week.
Yeah, both tomorrow. Yeah, we're shooting for like a 1 p.m. Central time. I'll be going to the office. It's a whole thing. You know, hopefully not the exact same things we just talked about, but you know, maybe we'll be able to break some news about like Giannis, you know, like Freak 2 colorway, like RotoWire colorway.
hopefully that happens. Are we announcing that tomorrow already?
Well, I mean, they need to get back to us after they hear this pod.
Oh my god. Okay, well, yeah, keep me posted on that, I guess. I have no doubt that Ken will have an entire itinerary that he'll want to get through, so you guys will be good.